Chris, you're the associate professor of music at K College, and right now, during COVID-19, teaching of any kind is going to be challenging, but I always think that music has got to be more challenging than most. When I see these things on TV these days with Zoom and, you know, 10, 15, 20 musicians each in their own little box, I think, oh my goodness, how do you get them all to come in at the right time?
A lot of editing.
How are you doing this? Tell us about how COVID-19 has changed the way you teach music.
Sure. Well, I think when the opportunity, you know, to teach online first came and was kind of passed down to us and said, you know, next term you're going to be doing everything from home, you know, my first thought was, absolutely, we're going to do some kind of choir. And I hadn't really thought at that point about what that would look like or what that would be or how even I would manage that. I knew about some virtual choirs. Eric Whitaker, very famous composer, choral composer and conductor, and he had done this with, I mean, hundreds of people before, and probably had amazing technology behind it and a great sound engineer. And so I thought, well, sure, of course, this makes sense. I should absolutely do something like this. So we put it out there and said, yes, I'd like to do this. We'll offer this. Students that had been signed up for what they thought would be an in-person class, almost all of them stayed in the class, which was great. So they're about 28 to 30, depending on the week. Sometimes they, depending on their workload and whatnot, right now they kind of, some pieces they won't sing on, or I'll give them a pass on that one because they're just maxed out on other things. But I probably foolishly jumped headlong into the water before I had even really thought about how I was going to do this. But, you know, that's kind of how it's worked for all of us with COVID-19.
That's true.
It just came and it happened. And then the next thing you know, a week later, all of us were scrambling to become our own sound engineers and to do this from home and to learn the technology and figure out how many people could be online at once without everything glitching, and just massive learning curve. But I knew I really wanted to do it. And I felt like, I guess it for me, it felt as much like a calling to do this as anything has, because, you know, we sing as human beings, we sing at most of our important experiences in life. So we sing at weddings, we sing at funerals, we sing at baptisms, we sing at ceremonies, graduations, we sing at all of these big markers in our lives. There's always music. And those are largely celebratory in most cases. But then I got to thinking about, you know, people have also sung throughout history at some of the worst times of their lives, and some of the most horrific, dark periods in history, the Holocaust. We have records of people that still manage to sing in the concentration camps, slavery. We have record of some of the most beautiful, most spiritual, literally its namesake, music that has been passed down from generation to generation, and people were singing it under the most horrific of circumstances. So for me to think for even a second that we weren't going to sing because of COVID-19, it felt like we would be dishonoring all of the people who have suffered far more than us, and would have been a very privileged sort of perspective to say, well, we're not going to sing. We'll do this again when we're back in person. So it felt like the right thing to do, and felt like it honored those before us who have suffered more, and certainly has brought truth and hopefully a bit of hope and light to the students that have sung in the choir. And then ideally also to the people when we disseminate whatever we've performed, usually on YouTube or Facebook or something like that. And it's hopefully providing them some sort of peace and comfort and hope.
You know, I hadn't thought about that healing aspect, that trying to get through tough times by using music as a kind of almost therapeutic tool. I have a Latvian ethnic background, and we have a very strong component of music in our culture because Latvia was oppressed for so long by other governments, Soviets and such. And choral music is a big part of it. I grew up singing in a choir with the entire family, Latvian music. I never thought about that aspect of it. That's interesting what you're saying.
Well, it's the one thing, your voice, and it's not about talent, of course, but your voice and this music and these songs that literally live in our hearts and in our bodies and in our minds really can't be taken away. So it's such a powerful, I think, way to have some sense of say over what's happening in your existence, whether you're in the slave fields or you're just stuck at home in COVID-19. And certainly,
yeah.
I think I don't want to for a half a second even suggest that what we're going through is anywhere as horrific. As much as it's difficult on all of us, it still could be much worse. And so, you know, it just felt like this is a really powerful way for me to do something good and right and just in this world that anybody can do. And they don't have to have a background in music. They don't have to have a music major. We're, you know, Kay is a liberal arts college. So our students are studying psych and bio and chemistry and all these other things. And they just want to sing.
So without getting too technologically savvy here, tell us about the process a little bit. How do you connect with the students? I imagine you have individual lessons as well. But as a choir, how do you do it, actually?
The downside of this is that you never actually get to hear yourself sing with other people until you hear the final product. Because
that's gotta be weird.
It's so weird, yeah. The delay is enormous, and Lord knows we've tried several different ways and different platforms, and none of them could allow things to happen in the right amount of time. So what we do basically is I record all of the parts, usually on the piano. If it's in my voice part, I will sing it. Sometimes my wife will sing some of the higher parts for us. And then we make these guide tracks and we send the students the music and this track that's playing their part. They get a timeline for the quarter where they say, here are all your deadlines. Your first draft of this is going to be due here. It's like a syllabus. And they are, you know, basically responsible to learn their part. And then what we do is about once a week, we do a session by section. So for 30 minutes or so, I'll meet with the sopranos, and then I'll meet with the altos, and I'll meet with the tenors and the basses. And what we do in those sessions is everybody gets on Zoom or Teams, whatever platform, again, it doesn't really matter. They all mute their phones or their computers, and then I lead what is basically a silent rehearsal. So it's the weirdest thing ever to be a director. It'd be like if Beethoven had rehearsed the Ninth Symphony after he wrote it or something, you know, because you're saying all these things and you're leading them through these rehearsals, quote unquote, at the piano on Zoom, but everybody's muted. So you can't hear them singing. You can see their mouths moving. So I'll do a phrase and I'll say, okay, now sing that back.
Oh,
and I just watch their mouths move. And it's really wild, you know, because one of the students the other day, he said to me on one of the tracks that I had recorded for them, they said, oh, I was watching the guide track. I'll get to that in a second. And they said the words were the air, T-H-E and then A-I-R. And they said, I was watching your mouth when you were conducting it, and it looked like you said the. And I said, wow, you picked up on that, just the way that the mouth was shaped without hearing it at all. And they said, yeah. And so do you want it the or the? And so you can tell a lot by watching, you know, mouth shape. And I can say, we've had several sessions with the altos where I'll say, listen, I'm watching you and I see that your mouths are, your jaw is tight or your mouth is not open enough. And so,
oh, we're going to develop lip reading skills here.
Yeah, it really, it's a whole new skill set. And then, so they rehearse it. We do the session together. And then I say, unmute questions. And then they talk and have questions. And then usually we leave the last 10 or 15 minutes of rehearsal just to check in. How are you doing? What are your concerns? How's your heart? How's your mental health? So, you know, because being in a choir, being on a college campus is partly about education, right? But it's also, you know, just our social network, our connection, and all those conversations that they have on the way to class, or they have in the dining hall, or they have, you know, they don't have those in person. And so I just think for their own mental health and our own connection to each other, it's really important to have those moments of conversation. So they have that. They talk a little bit. And then a few days later, I send them a conducting guide track where I have taken those audio tracks and I basically do a silent conducting to all those audio tracks. And then I send them that. And so in one ear, they're playing the audio track that I've recorded and they're seeing me on their screen conducting silently. And then with another device, they're recording themselves. So all the device is picking up is their video. Without the accompaniment, it's just that one voice singing. And then they send me that file, which usually takes about 12 hours because they're enormous files, and then you have to download them, and there's all kinds of problems with that. And then once they send them to me, I have to download every file and then essentially mix a 30-voice recording. You know, so it's like every single – so each song, a three-minute song, takes about 30 hours of editing to get all the pieces in place. And you move one voice over here, and then it doesn't line up. And then, you know, this person's out of tune, and so occasionally you have to send it back and say, all right, I need you to redo measures 24 and 25, and then I'll splice it in. And it is definitely a process, but I got to say that when – after all that waiting and all that independent work, when you hear that thing come together, it just lifts you into another plane.
Oh, Chris, do you get to ask for hero pay from K College?
Listen, you know, all of us and none of us are heroes right now. You know, I mean, it's all of us are learning so much. And yeah. I think it's, you know, I went into education and teaching because I love the students and I love connecting with them. And so much. I'm grateful to be in a job. I'm grateful to have students that are continuing to invest in their education. And, you know, if I can provide some small means of connection or hope, then it's all worth it to me.
It seems like when you do it this way, especially in a choir, some of you in pre-pandemic days could have gotten away with missing a note here and there or daydreaming a little bit while your companions there carry you. You have to be solo quality, it seems like, when you do it like this.
This is the downside and the upside. The downside is that there's nowhere to hide.
Yeah.
The upside is that there's nowhere to hide. And so what the students have found is their accountability, their personal accountability has gone through the roof. And I think when we had a couple of students early on drop the course, it was just that. It was like they're so used to being surrounded by other voices and learning by ear and by looking at their music that this just felt so isolating and so nerve-wracking. And yet, there are other students that I feel like, again, you know, we're a liberal arts college, so these are not students that are going to go on and be the next Jesse Norman or whatever, and they are just singing because they love it. So they come from a wide range of backgrounds and musical abilities. Some of them can read, some of them really learn by ear. And so watching them learn, you know, and basically have a individualized coaching with me as they prepare their part, it's been really fun just over 10 weeks to see a couple of voices that, you know, were all really tiny, mousy little voices that have just come out of their shells and blossomed. And there's an enormous instrument in there that I think they didn't even know themselves that they had. Hmm. And it's hard to sing. I mean, it's hard to sing anyway, but these are students that are not singing in a practice room where they're soundproofing. They're all in their, some of them are in their garage. Some of the recordings come from their bathrooms, the top of the stairs. I've seen the basement. I've seen just about every room in the house has been videoed, and students in all manner of states when they record them. Although I do caveat and say, listen, there's a chance that your video will be on the final recording if we do a video.
So get out of those
pajamas. Make sure you're presentable. Yeah, you know, comb your hair or something. But most of them are, you know, I think they're just happy to be doing something and having some kind of a schedule that's set, and that they have something they know they have to hit the mark on it, and that they're going to have some, I wouldn't say immediate gratification, because 30 hours of editing later takes a couple weeks. But by next week, we should have all the files done, and a couple of them have videos with them. We're doing a song right now called What Happens When a Woman And the line is, what happens when a woman takes power? What happens when she won't back down? And we're creating a video of all these strong women throughout history, including my female singers in the choir, in various states of leadership and presence. And I'm going to send it on to Gretchen Whitmer when we're done, I think. I don't know.
There you go. Yeah, I'd love to see that and hear it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful piece. Really cool, tight harmony. And it's been fun to watch them and to listen to them pull this together and really dig deep for the kind of energy that it needs.
So when this is all over, if it is ever all over, any lessons that we can take from this into that post-pandemic world?
Yeah, I think for us, the musical accountability of everybody having to record their part. So I would say I would never continue this kind of thing just as if there were an opportunity to be together, but I would take parts of it, like say, here's the deadline for this piece. Cause imagine how much more gratifying it would be to come to a choral rehearsal when everybody had already learned their part and everybody was starting at, you know, the same level and had taken whatever amount of time and coaching to get there. I mean, it takes a little more doing and would certainly require a bit more in advance of me to get there. But I think everybody's experience and the musical level of the choir, whichever choir it is, whether it's Bach Festival or College Singers or whatever it might be, will undoubtedly rise as a result of it. So I think it's possible to take the best of both worlds and certainly we'll just keep doing this and keep singing. I'm even thinking about doing something during the summer, I keep talking to the students and anybody that had an internship or summer work doesn't now. All those jobs dried up. And
true.
So, again, just finding some ways to keep them connected to the college, to keep them connected to each other, to keep some sort of normalcy and a sense of forward motion in their lives, regardless of what the next CDC recommendation is.
That kind of touched on my next question, along with teaching this. I believe you're also the music director for the Bach Festival. You mentioned that, the Luxester mm-hmm. Choir. What else do you do at Kay?
So it's Bach Festival is 1/4 of my assignment, and that's been interesting. We had to cancel the later part of our season.
You did.
Spring, yeah, like so many other organizations. But you know, our greatest resource in Bach Festival is our singers, and we have about 80 of them. And so we have found ways to connect and remain together, accountable to each other, in each other's care. So we do every couple of weeks, we do a session where we get on Zoom. Sometimes we listen to great choral works. Sometimes we have coaching sessions about things that, you know, you always want to take the time to do X, Y, or Z, but you're usually too busy preparing some work. And again, this is an opportunity to say, well, what could we do that we normally don't get to do? And how do we use this to our advantage? And so we've done that. We've created season plans for next year that are both virtual and which are online, and some which are hybrid. And we've talked about this summer doing a virtual choir with some of the Bach Fest. We had an online recital where people submitted solo works. So I've been doing that. And then I run a music festival in Petoskey, the Bayview Music Festival. And so we've been, same thing, really. We were supposed to open in mid-June, and we've been creating all kinds of scenarios. So if the governor says we're allowed to meet, then we'll have scenario A will happen. And if we're not, then we have a plan for a virtual concerts. And yeah, it's crazy how much you have all this extra time in your life, and yet you're also seemingly working three jobs because you're essentially creating different scenarios that, you know, you're ready to enact whenever the recommendation comes.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, how you came to Kalamazoo College. You haven't been there too terribly long at this point, have you?
No, I still feel like I'm on honeymoon, and this is I am finishing
what
my third
year. What an initiation, Chris.
Boy, it's exactly. It's like taking your honeymoon and then having a hurricane on the island that you decide to, you know, to honeymoon on. So, but this is my third year that I'm completing right now.
Okay.
And Before that, my wife and I lived in Cleveland, Ohio, and had still been doing that job with Bayview up in Petoskey. And then this opportunity at K came, and it was perfect because my parents both are from the area. They both grew up in Battle Creek. My dad went to Western. My mom went to K. And so it was really neat for us to be able to already have ties to this area. My uncle lives near the campus. So we knew of the college. We knew of the great community that Kalamazoo is. We knew of its arts support of all these great foundations and the Kalamazoo Promise. And so we literally pinch ourselves every day and are just so fortunate to be here. My wife teaches for Crescendo Music Academy downtown and does music together with families. And so she's been doing that virtually. So there is music happening in our house now all the time. And it's just so fun to see families and people connecting with each other.
How did you become interested in music? Do you come from a musical family?
I was had hopes at one point when I was just a wee lad, probably in one of my kids' age, maybe 8, 7 or 8, I wanted to be the next Barry Manilow. And then I think with a little time and a little wisdom, decided that really only one Barry Manilow was enough. And that, I mean, I have such tremendous respect for his talent, but honestly, my parents said, well, you should probably teach because you really, you know, you have a teacher's heart. And my mom was a teacher. And so then I went and got a music ed degree at Indiana University, and I stayed there for a master's. And then I got to work for the Indianapolis Opera Company for a while after that for several years, and led several different church choir programs. And I guess, you know, I think I always knew that music would be part of my life. I don't think if you said to me, hey, you're going to be a professional conductor and you're going to make a living as a musician, I don't think I would have necessarily believed that would happen. I just knew that it would somehow be a part of who I am. But honestly, it's like any job, you know, I mean, the amount of time you spend probably interviewing is not nearly as much as you have to do preparing and editing and all these things. And so all of us have these other things as part of our responsibilities, whatever they are, that are all the behind the scenes that takes oodles more effort than the fun stuff, you know, when we really get to do the performance on stage, or the, in this case, recording, or the chance to connect with people via live stream. So,
general lesson in life, everything's harder than it looks.
Boy, and how. Yes.
Did I see somewhere that you were working on a book on the aesthetic process, integrating music into daily life? Or did I?
Yeah. I know you read that. That was legit. That's a tabled project for the time being, largely just because we have young kids, 8 and 11, and they're requiring quite a bit of time, especially right now. But I just contributed a chapter to a book on relevance in the choral art. So choral music is primarily kind of a white upper middle class art form for the most part, and like so much of classical music. But I think the people like myself that are making the music, you know, even though that's often our audience, I think we recognize that there is so much more out there that other cultures, other races, other religions, et cetera, can contribute to people's sense of arts and culture, that we're constantly trying to expand that. So the book is really, it's called Choral Relevance in the Choral Art, and I contributed a chapter, and it was really exciting to think about how are we doing this, how are we connecting with ever wider audiences. And it's neat to see a town like Kalamazoo that has such a vibrant community and a great, you know, public school system, and, you know, not without its challenges, certainly, but we, again, consider ourselves very fortunate to have kids in KPS and are thrilled with the level of instruction that we've had there and the commitment of the teachers that have done so much, especially during this time.
And finally, to sum this all together, what are your thoughts on the power of arts to motivate and create community?
Yeah, I don't think there's any better way to create community than through the arts. For me, the medium is music. You know, you asked how long have I known I was going to be doing music? And I think, honestly, for me, the music was always the medium of creating connection. And so for some, making music is an end unto itself. And for me, it is the means by which I contribute to society and the means by which I bring people together that otherwise wouldn't have the chance to interact with each other, whether they're in the audience or they're standing next to each other singing or they're submitting their recordings and then hearing it on Zoom later. It's just, it is the one art form, or one of many art forms, I should say, that transcends our differences and allows us to rise above where we find ourselves, no matter what the circumstances. Again, whether it's we're singing spirituals, or we're in church, or we're laboring, we're singing sea shanties. You know, it's just music is a part of who we are as humans, and it's innately human. And I think that is what we celebrate.
Thank you so much for spending some of your time telling us about your work, Chris, in this really strange time.
To say the least, yes. But I'm so grateful for the ways that you guys are keeping us connected and keeping us interacting with each other and hearing about stories like this. So thank you.